Just the cards.
Well, the cards, or then we start with the city.
Start with the city, and just to let everyone know what's on the docket here, the city has requested 20 minutes for their initial presentation. They would like to have, well, they said up to 20 minutes, and they have their cards in the order that they would like to present. And then they did ask for the opportunity up to 15 minutes to respond to comments, questions, and have a closing statement. So that's, and the chair approved that request. So here's their batch of cards. And then for the public comments, we have, I think I counted 12 cards here.
13
cards. So that's what we have lined up for us.
Okay. You ready? All right. Stacy Lawson. Sure. Sure. And then with this group of cards, I have Ms. Lawson, Tess Durham, Lucille Breeze. Sure. We'll take a 5-minute break while we set up, while the city sets up. So I take it, Mr. Briggs, that the cards that I have for the city, they're going to be sharing the 20 minutes?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Initially, and then they asked for an additional 15 for follow-up and closing.
Okay. Ms. Lawson?
Actually, to make a correction here, my name is Tess Dunham, and I am going to start off the presentation for the city.
Okay.
Hang on. Don't panic.
I can yell. I got kids. So.
The chairman has control.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Briggs. Again, let me repeat. I think we are recording this just to make sure we get everything into the record. My name is Tess Dunham. I am an attorney in Sacramento with the firm Somax Simmons & Dunn, and I am here today representing the City of Lompoc as special counsel. I'm going to start off our presentation this morning, and then Stacy Lawson, who is the city's director of the stormwater program, will follow me. And, of course, we do have other staff here available to answer questions on specifics of the program as well as the city should that become necessary or needed. So with that, I think Dominic did a great job this morning providing you with an overview of the city. We'd like to point out just a few other facts for you to put it all into perspective for those of you that are not familiar with the special city of Lompoc. We have a population of about 41,000. Our whole area is approximately 7 square miles. We're a fairly small, compact city, and primarily all built out. As Dominic indicated, there really is very little available land within the city's jurisdiction that could be newly developed. So most of the projects that dominate the city of Lompoc fall into the redevelopment and the infill category, which as we start talking about the hydromodification issues, I think is going to be important for all of us to remember. We have an existing surface storm drain system. We have very few developable parcels that actually remain. So again, most of it will be infill or redevelopment. We are flat, the lower reach of the San Ynez River. And of course, as you saw earlier, we have the one concrete line channel, which is actually controlled by Santa Barbara County Flood Control District. And here's just another picture. And we'll go through quickly the aerial view. I thought Dominic's slides actually were probably a little bit better than the ones we're able here to provide. We do want to give you just to let you know that in spite of the fact that we have been working on getting an adopted stormwater program for the city of Lompoc since, I think, 2003 when the state first adopted its general order, the city has not sat back and waited for that to happen. They have undergone and started to take actions in order to address stormwater control within the city, even despite the lack of an approved stormwater management program. The city requires stormwater filters for projects. There are bioswales and basins in order to retain the water. You saw some of those pictures earlier. Disconnected downspouts are encouraged. We do have buffers between the development and the wetlands within the city, and we require SWIPs when there is development for 1 acre more size. We'll go ahead and move forward. As it was indicated, it has been somewhat of a moving target for the city. We first complied and submitted our stormwater management plan back in 2003. We have continued to update that in response to concerns expressed forward by staff or as this changing evolution of issues has come forward. I think it's important to note that the staff proposes 21 different required changes, and we want to make sure that people understand that 14 of those required changes the city is willing to do with no problem, and we will address it, including clarifying some of the public school issues that you had talked about, Chairman Young. So we really want to focus our efforts here today on discussing 7 different items, just to make you understand that the city is not adverse to making changes to its program to try to address and make it the best program possible. The issues of concern, and I know it looks like that we are a little bit out of order numerically, and there is a reason for that. We're going to lump together items 16, 17, 18, and 20 together as they do result and come out of the discussions with the February 15th letter, and followed by the July 10 letter. And then the individual items 3, 10, and 14 are more specific to the city and not necessarily related to hydro modification control. And Stacy Lawson will come forward and talk about those items. We will run through these quickly. They are on your table of required revisions, which is attached to your agenda or your supplemental sheet. Item number 16 is the general requirement that requires the city to have an adequate development review and permitting process for implementing and enforcing numeric criteria for hydro modification control. Item 17 is the required revision that would require the city to adopt interim hydro modification criteria within a year that are basically equivalent to those put forward in the February 15th letter. And then 18 is for the long-term hydro modification control program. And 19 is the long-term watershed protection, looking beyond, in fact, just the city's stormwater program within its city boundaries and jurisdiction, but looking at long-term watershed protection issues. As part of that, the long-term watershed protection requirements as put forward would require the city to assess the chemical, physical, and biological impacts on beneficial uses, characterize the watershed and stormwater discharges, identify sources of pollutants, and evaluate long-term trends in receiving water quality. Dominic went over very well the February 15th letter, but we wanted to provide a little bit more specificity to you because with all due respect is the characterization put forward by staff, we do disagree as to the impact of the numeric values put forward as interim criteria in the February 15th letter. I think it needs to be known what the February 15th letter proposes is to require that a total project area for a project within the city of Lompoc would be required to maintain a total or an effective impervious area that is less than 5% of the total project. In other words, a very small portion of your project area could be impervious. There is also requirements with regards to runoff hydrographs that must match 1% the pre-construction runoff. And we talk about pre-construction as defined in the February 15th letter. Pre-construction is before it was ever previously developed, not pre-construction to the new project. If the project area exceeds 2 acres, then again you must preserve the pre-construction's drainage density and ensure post-project time of concentration is equal to or greater than pre-project time of concentration. Establish buffer zones, include an effective strategy to minimize pollutant loading, and your long-term program must achieve an effective impervious area of no more than 3 to 10% of the watershed area within your jurisdiction. Perhaps this is much easier for a large watershed within your jurisdiction, but when you're Lompoc and the watershed is fairly large, but your jurisdiction itself is a very small portion of that watershed, requirements such as these can become very difficult to meet. Also, as a part of the February 15th letter, there were other requirements for preparing an evaluation plan, including quantifiable measures. These are listed out here. And I think it's very important to note that Dominic and Mr. Briggs have noted that the February 15th letter did receive a fair amount of attention from cities and individuals within the coastal area and within the region too. Or actually, I'm in region
three.
Sorry about that. That's what happens when you practice all over the state. It's important to note that the California Association of Stormwater Quality Agencies also submitted a letter. They did look at the February 15th letter that was put out, and they were quite concerned. And you have to understand that this is a statewide association that represents large as well as small municipalities. And in their experience in working on these issues, and they really are at the forefront because they are looking to improve stormwater quality and looking at what are appropriate LID principles as well as hydro modification tools, they really were quite stunned to find that the Central Coast region would be out front in the manner that they were seeking to impose such requirements on Phase 2 communities, especially in light of the fact that most of the Phase 1 communities CASCO is dealing with, they can't figure out how to do it. And in fact, you have SCORP and other organizations in Southern California that are working with those Phase 1 communities to actually develop hydro modification tools. So CASCO's main comment was, you know, it really isn't ready within the context of a stormwater management program in a Phase 2 community. There needs to be time to develop these management tools first and look to the advantage of using Phase 1 as well as some of the SCORP and other studies that are currently ongoing. I think, and again, and actually before we talk about the July 10th letter, I do want to make a note here that the city of Lompoc did not have the advantage of revising its swamp at one point with the July 10th letter. The city was required to submit its next version in this enrollment process on May 26th. So they were in advance of the July 10th letter and the examples that were provided in the July 10th letter. But we also need to put it into context, because the July 10th letter specifically says that the regional board is willing to consider other criteria if they are reasonably equivalent to the February 15th. Reasonably equivalent to 5% EIA. Reasonably equivalent to 3 to 10% of the watershed for EIA. And I think it's really important to recognize that this July 10 letter does not open up for huge amounts of flexibility, does not open it up for individual communities to determine what is appropriate for them. It does maintain some value to the interim criteria that were put forward in the July 15, or the February 15. And if you do not put forward something that they think is reasonably equivalent, you will then be subject to those interim criteria of 5% EIA, as well as the other numeric criteria put forward in that letter.
Can I ask you a question right there?
Sure.
What's an EIA, you're referring to what?
Effective impervious area.
Okay, well, let's talk about that a second. Is it your understanding then in that February 15th letter that, let me find it here, that for new and redeveloped projects, EIA, effective impervious surface areas, shall we maintain at less than 5% of total project areas, period? Did you read the footnote on that?
I did read the footnote underneath that.
And what does that mean to you?
What it means to me is for the footnote is that when the impervious area drains directly to the storm drain system,
right,
and not into an impervious area,
right,
that total project area can only have an impervious area of less than 5%.
Right. So in other words, if there are impervious areas that drain into a swale or some other structure, then you can have more than 5%. Is that not correct?
Well, you know, I don't know. I think what you have to look at, though, is the total project area, and in some cases, you can't meet that. I mean, I might refer to Stacy as the city has looked very carefully at the types of lots and configurations that they have within their city. Because of the fact that the city does rely on groundwater for its source of water supply, they don't want a lot of pervious areas for example, driveways. Last thing you want is a driveway that has a lot of pervious area. So the driveways do go straight into the storm drain system. Well, a driveway itself will eat up almost the whole 5%, which means you have nothing else left for sidewalks or anything else within a project area. And you have to overlay the fact that you have ordinances for parking lot requirements for larger commercial developments that you have to also overlay with your requirements.
Yeah, that part is difficult, but I mean, that's something that can be done. You're changing ordinances it's done all the time.
Well, maybe the planning department might want to have a comment on changing to meet parking needs, but...
Okay. Okay, I just didn't want people to think that 5% was... I didn't want people not to know about the footnote here, because that's what your implication was in your presentation. Left the footnote out, and I think that's a very important part.
Mr. Shilcross, can you tell us what page you're looking at?
Oh, I'm sorry. This is February 15th letter, page 4, and under... Is it one, big I? I don't know. Whatever that... symbol is.
It's attachment 2.
No. That's page 4 of the February 15th letter, center of the page, under maximize infiltration of clean stormwater.
Right.
That first bullet under there.
Right. The letter and is attachment 2.
Oh, the letter is attachment 2. Right. Yeah. And then there's a footnote under EIA.
And that's footnote number 2.
Number 2.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. We did stop the clock, by the way, so we didn't lose
any
time.
No problem. I trust you.
Okay. Go ahead.
And I do also, and maybe kind of following up, you know, the city did look very seriously at the February 15th letter. Again, they did not have the advantage of the July 10th letter when they were in their enrollment process needing to revise their plan. So they did look and take very seriously the language and the requirements within the February 15th. They did not think there was any way, based upon the configuration of the city of Lompoc, that they could meet the numeric interim criteria as they proposed. But what they did do is go back and look at their city, their lot sizes, their infill and redevelopment projects to try to come up with what they thought were appropriate MEP lid hydromodification requirements for the city itself. And what they put forward and proposed in that May 26 proposal was stormwater filters, roof drains to discharge to landscaping, compliance with lot coverage and landscaping requirements under the zoning ordinance, and actually the city does require drought-tolerant landscaping. They continue and they required the 30-foot buffer requirements for the riparian vegetation, and to require that post-construction BMPs be maintained in perpetuity. In addition, what the city proposed based upon its local configuration is that the EIA of the new development would be limited to 25% of the total project area. And this goes to the fact that the city, looking at its lot size, its need to make sure that parking areas are pervious or impervious because of protection of the groundwater supplies, that the best that they can do, and on most lots, even 25% would be very difficult. And if you have more specific questions, I will defer to staff. But they did look at it, and this is what they came up with as their best estimate as what could be done as an EIA for the city of Lompoc.
One quick question. What's the distance to groundwater? Is groundwater table very high because of the flat terrain? Is that the issue?
I'm sorry?
15 to 20, I understand it would be a range, but 15 to 20 feet below surface?
And again, looking at the long-term program, again, looking at the fact that what they felt was most appropriate was an EIA of 25% for the total project area. So The city has, and so we put those forward. They have been rejected by the staff within the table of required revisions, claiming that they were not provided with viable justification, and that instead we needed to provide something that was equivalent or reasonably equivalent to the standards in the February 15th letter. So the city's general concerns, and here we get into more the policy and the legal implications that we would contend with the requirements as put forward in the table of required revisions. And I run through these individually, but just as an overall. First of all, the interim criteria are arbitrary. We do argue and contend that they do exceed the maximum extent practical standard, and we will explain our reasoning for that. They are inconsistent with the state's general permit, and that they do exceed requirements that are being imposed on Phase 1 communities. Arbitrary. Within the February 15th letter and following the July 10th letter, there is no scientific or technical basis that the regional board staff provides to support an EIA of 5%. The requirements would require a great deal of land, and you would have to have the appropriate soil and groundwater conditions to accommodate it. The use of the information based on the current literature that is out there that may suggest 5% is a range is premature at this time until there's been further studies with regards to it. And really, and in fact, many of the specialists in this area contend that for EIA, you need to look on a much larger spatial scale for application than just a project area.
Can I just have you go over one of the points in the slide you were just on? Why do you think that the current literature is premature at this point, to rely upon? What is it specifically about it that you don't get a lot of confidence from?
Well, in reading, and I am not a hydrologist by any means, but in when you look at the interim criteria mirror and come exactly from those that are proposed in the draft permit for the Ventura County Stormwater Program. That permit has been in the process for well over a year. I think we're going on to year two. Those criteria have not changed. With that, I think we're on draft three or four at this point. There continues to be a significant amount of debate, discussion, analysis by GeoSyntec and others as to the efficacy and the and of a 5% EIA on a total project area. And it is in many of the technical memorandums by GeoSyntec and the comments that they have submitted that questions using the current literature in order to establish a specific numeric criteria of 5% for EIA.
Do you know what EPA's position is with respect to a percentage for EIA?
I do not.
And who's GeoSyntec?
GeoSyntec are stormwater hydrologist consultants.
And who are they working for in this case?
In this case here for the city of Lompoc, no one here. They are working for the
case you're talking about.
For the building industry, Southern California Building Industry Association.
Okay, thanks.
So in exceeding MEP, I think it's important to understand what MEP is. MEP, as described in the general permit, is an ever-evolving, flexible, and advancing concept which considers technical and economic feasibility. In other words, when you apply MEP, it really needs to be done on a site-specific or community-specific basis. You cannot apply one standard generically across the board and achieve MEP because then you have failed to consider is it technically and economically feasible in the situation for which it is applied. As the interim criteria would be proposed, the numerics, it would not be site-specific. If you have to be reasonably equivalent, you have not considered local flexibility. We have put forward a local standard. It has been rejected. It fails to consider any of the technical and economic feasibility associated with the application of that criteria to the city of Lompoc and its situation. It looks like I got a yellow light. I better speed along. We contend that it is consistent with the state's general permit. The state's general permit has minimum control measures. The whole intent behind the general permit, when you read the fact sheet, is that phase two is a gentle ramping up period. Phase two communities really shouldn't be required to conform to phase one, and I have yet to find a phase one community that is required to meet an EIA of 5%. I need to speed through. I think that, you know, go back one. And again, we just talked about the Ventura permit, and I'll just add again, that is draft. It has not been adopted. There's considerable controversy in whether the EIA of 5% and that permit will be adopted is still a very large question. For the city itself, and looking at sources from the Center of Watershed Protection, that there are several situations where requiring significant infiltration is not desirable or feasible. That includes an infill development and redevelopment, where you have soils and existing grading and drainage patterns that are not suited to increased infiltration, and of course where contaminants could percolate into groundwater that is used for drinking. It will, you know, cost, obviously, there's an increased cost associated with these types of principles. And for the city of Lompoc, it is a practical constraint. And again, we keep saying MEP is a local site-specific standard, and you have to take that into consideration. You can't just say that, well, we think hydro modification is good, and therefore you need it to meet MEP. And I think that based upon what I've seen in the staff reports and the letters, that's pretty much all the evidence that's been provided in order to support the application of these controls onto the city of Lompoc. We probably should switch, Stacy. I want to make sure you get through yours real quick.
Can I ask you a quick question? If you can stop the clock there. Hello.
Yes, please stop.
Go ahead. Okay. Can you go back one slide? That's not the slide I thought. You said that the drainage ditch is owned by the city of
the county.
But does your stormwater drain into that ditch? Is that where your stormwater goes? Why are we even talking about the ditch if you have nothing to do with it?
Hi. Yeah. My name is Stacy Lawson. I'm the city's senior environmental coordinator. The San Miguelito Creek is channelized in the concrete channel. It is owned and maintained by the County of Santa Barbara. Our east-west channel discharges into the San Miguelito Creek channel. One reason why we're bringing that up is because of hydro modification, i.e. erosion and impacts to channelization. When you have a concrete channel, you're not going to get any erosion or impacts to that channel. And that is our only creek. So that was the reason that was raised.
Does your stormwater drainage from the city go into that creek?
It goes into the channel. Yeah. Yeah. But not the creek, okay, when the it's channel. Unchannelized. Yeah. Yes.
Okay, thanks.
Another question. Is all of San Miguelito concreted throughout the city?
Within the city, it is generally concrete. It's a little hard. I don't have a pointer, but it reaches the city in the detention basin, and at that point, from the detention basin on, it's channelized until its outfall at the Santa Ynez River.
So that's all concrete.
That's correct.
The east-west channel
is an improved,
is earthen,
structurally reinforced, but earthen channel. So it does allow for vegetation and percolation.
So what constituents are contaminating or degrading the groundwater from your stormwater discharge from the east-west channel?
At this time, I cannot tell you because we are not in a point where we have, one, we're not under permit. We haven't been required to find these type of contaminations. The other issue, you know, that wasn't hit too hard was that in Lompoc, and it's been five or more years that we've required all new development to put stormwater filters in their projects. And we allow for infiltration of everything but the parking area, everything but travel ways. Everything else can infiltrate, and we encourage that. But in the travel way portion, anything that has parking or potential oil and such to be deposited needs to go through a stormwater filter, which has an oil and grease filter in it, and the property owner or homeowner association is required to continually maintain that in perpetuity. So some of that pollution may not even get to the east-west channel if there is pollution in there.
Right. But you have a substantial amount of this urban runoff that's going to the east-west channel, I presume.
There's rain.
And that's pervious. That's percolating groundwater. So, and your concern is about that this stormwater is going to have nasty stuff in it that is contaminating groundwater. So I'm wondering what that is based on, since you have your stormwater percolating into groundwater within the city.
You know, I can't give you the details or the specifics as far as what we find in our groundwater versus what we find in our stormwater. We have not sampled our stormwater.
And part of our job is to protect groundwater as well as surface water. So that's the reason for source control with the stormwater.
And we are not opposed to source control.
Okay.
And as Dominic had mentioned, we are anxious to improve stormwater and move forward into our program. We've been trying to do that for the last 5 years. However, there are some of these things, the seven items that we really feel we are going to have a great difficulty implementing if they're possible at all. Those are the things. Everything else we've agreed to do.
I guess my point is, it sounded like the implication is that we have bad stuff in our runoff that's going to contaminate groundwater, so we want to make sure we discharge that and contaminate the groundwater downstream of our city. But in this case, it's actually below your city because of the east-west channel being pervious. So it's not an argument that holds up, and that in turn goes back to your rationale for why you can't have more pervious areas with individual developments because of your ordinances that say that you can't percolate to groundwater because you'll contaminate groundwater.
We've always had an approach that we do not want to have anything from vehicle discharge going into our groundwater. Stormwater is relatively new for phase twos. Stormwater as an issue is relatively new for phase twos. But in the time that we have found out about phase two stormwater, and it's been about 10 years now, we have implemented our own BMPs. We have gone ahead and moved forward and required the filters. And it's a process in generation. Once we have all the filters in, once properties develop and redevelop, you will have more filters. You will have less groundwater infiltration from the east-west channel. But it's a process of getting...
Yeah, and I think the point, too, is Mr. Briggs, is that they do require the stormwater filters, right? So they are able to gather the stormwater before it leaves with, you know, vehicle contamination. It is filtered before it goes into the storm drain system. So I think that's an important component to look at, that we're not just saying that the vehicle runoff goes straight into a storm drain system. It is filtered prior to and therefore collecting any pollutants before it would go into the storm drain system.
So that's all of the runoff is filtered from the whole city?
In any new development or redevelopment.
Oh, in any new development, but not for the rest of the city.
For the city as a whole, we also have a program of retrofitting our existing storm drain inlets with filters.
Okay, good.
And that's included in our plan.
Oh, good. And when do you expect that to be completed?
Our estimation was, I think, within the permit term.
So within 5 years of whenever it's...
Right, the actual city storm drains. That's what our permit said, or our swamp says.
Okay, great.
How many storm drains does the city currently have, approximately?
I can't guarantee the number. I think it's about 300.
300, and so
But I'm not certain.
Okay, and about how many are filtered?
I could not tell you at this time. The main inlets versus what we're asking is not the main inlets so much. That is a part of our program. But any development has to filter it before it goes off at their site.
Onto a street.
Into the city storm drain system, yeah. Whether it goes onto the street or into a storm drain.
It's more of a source control for that specific site. Right, okay. And what requirements are you imposing on those filters to be maintained, repaired, replaced?
Conditions of approval are put on each application that states that either the property owner or the homeowners association or property owners association must maintain them in perpetuity.
Any more specificity than that?
No, I think that's pretty specific.
Well, any requirement to check performance? I mean, how long do you keep a filter, you know, before you have to clean it?
The requirement, I believe, says that they need to maintain the filters per the recommendations of the filter manufacturer.
Okay.
And generally, that's 2 or 3 years. It needs to be checked and replaced.
Okay. And does the city have any policy in terms of follow-up oversight or enforcement to make sure that those provisions are being followed?
Not at this point. We do not regularly check the filters. Okay. However, that may be a part of implementing a swamp.
Okay. Well, it's certainly something the city could do without the water board saying, you know, do it. Mm-hmm. The way I look at these things, it certainly would represent a serious attempt to get on top of that particular issue and make sure it's functioning the way the city would like it to function and not just leaving it in the hands of the discharger. Because lots of things fall through the cracks, you know, as we all know. Okay.
I have one more quick question.
Sure.
From what I understand, the city's pretty much built out, so you're not expecting any major new developments.
Not at this time. At this point, what we have is one or two, maybe three developments which are already vested, some in the construction phase. And that is pretty much the limits of everything that is within the city. We do have pretty small, a little bit of industrial area that could develop, a little bit of commercial area. After that, it's redevelopment. And we're talking about small lots.
Yeah, I'm just trying to get a sort of a handle on, I think it's great that you're requiring these redevelopments and new developments to have the on-site filters if they're maintained properly. But just wondering what percentage of the entire stormwater runoff from the city that's actually impacting. I mean,
well, because most all of any development that occurs in the city is redevelopment or infill.
I know, but what percentage of that compared to the entire city? I mean, is it 5% of the city's parcels have filters or?
It would be difficult for me to say as far as that goes, or to identify how much in any 1 year is redeveloped.
Yeah.
Because when you are so built out, and this is part of our issue, a lot of property owners will move into an existing structure, and it has existing parking, and then all they do is move in. And so you have no opportunity to get your filter.
And so does every redevelopment project have to have put in a filter, or are there certain criteria?
The criteria would be that if they add any additional parking, basically, or if they redo their parking lot.
Oh, it's only parking.
It's only for parking.
Okay.
Because everything else we assume and encourage them to infiltrate into the site.
Okay, thanks.
Not to belabor the point of the filters, but what is the material of choice for these filters?
The material is, the applicant is open to proposing whatever the filter is. There are a number of professional stormwater filter manufacturers. And so generally a filter will have a metal case and a filter fabric, and then a flow guard filter will have a package that's in there to collect oil and grease. So part of it collects sediment and trash. The other part collects oil and grease.
And are the filters designed to catch peak flow, average flow? You know, what percent of the runoff off of a parcel? Has the city developed any criteria for that?
The city, to my knowledge, I don't think there's a specific criteria in those kind of terms. Basically, it would be all flow from the site. Anything that was going to flow from that parking area into that filter. And that's where you would have to assume, basically we require that all the flow goes into the filter.
Okay, because I'm sure you could see.
I understand.
It would kind of be a waste of time if there weren't some real criteria that were going to be effective, that someone could get by your requirement by putting in some small little filter that captured, you know, 1% of average flow or peak flow.
The parking lots need, and maybe the engineers can be more specific about the design, but the parking lots are designed, they're required to drain the whole thing to the filter.
Okay.
And the filter is required to be sized to be adequate to that. Okay. So they can't kind of put a filter here and then have some draining off that way.
Well, I'd hope not. And we don't need to get into the engineering of it, but I want you to appreciate what we're thinking about, that something is going to be effective
mm-hmm.
for its intended purpose. Okay. Did we want to go back to your lawyer's presentation, or were you switching?
We're actually switching.
Okay.
I did want to...
Now we'll go back on the clock.